On the line from Northern California, we have Anthony Sanchez, and he's been making quite a buzz in the UFO community for some time. We've known Anthony since he first showed up in New Mexico and did a live show with us in front of an audience. And he has a book called Highway, UFO Highway, and it's a great read, and now it's in a hardbound copy. And later on, we're going to take a few phone calls. But first of all, Anthony, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jerry.
It's always good to having you on. And have you recovered from your fast trip to New Mexico?
You know, I'm still recovering. So I've gotten a lot of help from a lot of friends, a lot of new friends. And I'm really thankful and grateful for all of their assistance. And yeah. I'm still undergoing a little bit of pain, and you can obviously tell my voice is still affected, but I'm still, you know, waiting for the results for some blood tests to come back.
Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about like what we're talking about here? We'd probably need to start at the beginning. A lot of people know about what has been happening with you, Anthony, but why don't you just tell the story? You ended up at the Taos Conference there at the 2011 Symposium and Film Festival, and you made some real news. And the way you made the real news is you stopped by Dulce on the way to Taos.
That's right.
Why don't you just kind of tell everybody what happened there? I mean, you arrived at Taos. You arrived in Dulce first, I guess. What, early in the morning or late at night or what?
Yeah, 2:30 in the morning on Monday, the 24th, we arrived at Dulce, and we checked into the Mass Western, the Jicarilla, the Mass Western Inn there, and it's the Wild Horse Casino. Anyhow, that 8 o'clock that morning, I met with my contact there, and I don't want to give her name out because she wants to remain anonymous. It's understandable. This is the same person who facilitated the arrival for Jesse Ventura and his crew from the True TV network. She had informed me that we were going to be meeting with the public relations officer, Leon K. Raval, from the Jicarilla Apache Nation, and that we were also going to be meeting with the tribal council president. I don't know why we were going to meet with them, but I guess it was to gain permission, because apparently Governor Ventura was denied access to film on the reservation. When his crew showed up on Friday the 21st, they told them that they were not going to be allowed to film on the reservation directly, but that they could off the reservation, you know, just outside of town. And they were actually given a contact, a local Bigfoot expert, Hoyt Velarde, who I guess was taking them around, giving them information and whatnot, and hopefully that worked out well, because I really want to see Governor Ventura's show succeed. I'm a big fan of his, and I just hope that that Dulce episode really, you know, resonates with the people. So
yeah, I think Anthony, as far as Jesse Ventura and his TV show, I talked to one of the producers again. And, you know, they want to do a show about Dulce. They just haven't gotten the right film yet. Right video. And it's a work in progress. They still have a couple of months before this thing debuts. So, you know, I think it's a feather in your hat, so to speak, that you were able to get access and other people weren't. And how do you attribute that? I mean, why did they give you the access?
Well, here's the reason why. I am close personal friends with several families of the Jicarilla Nation. And in all the time that I have known these people, I have never spoken negatively about the nation. I have demonstrated to them that I have a complete knowledge of their sacred texts. I have read all 52 of the Jicarilla sacred texts, the Jicarilla Apache sacred texts. And I did so to gain a knowledge into the culture, into the environment, and to just truly understand who it is I'm dealing with, you know, there in Dulce. And I really have a profound respect for these people. I love these people. They're great friends of mine. And we actually stayed with them. So it's a testament as to how much, you know, we have created, how much of a bond we've created with one another. This person who took us to the tribal council literally sat us down in front of the public relations officer and the tribal council president, and I was so honored to be there. And I gave them a copy of my book, and, you know, they had already read the website and the book, apparently, and they knew.
Yeah, because it had been an e-book for a while, but you've revised it somewhat.
That's right. There are a lot of revisions in the print version. The e-book was an unedited version. It was never meant to be released, but it was. And it is what it is. But I gave Public Relations Officer Raval a copy of my book, and I was really pleased that he was happy that we were there, because he knew we were going to do nothing but good, you know, things. You know, we respect the Jicarilla people. Later that morning, at about 10:30, we found ourselves on top of the mesa, and we were looking for two areas in particular. We wanted to...
I don't mean to interrupt you, but just...
Yep.
Just for the sake of people understanding, tell me your impression and how you got up to the mesa. Is there a road going up there, or what? I mean, how did it look?
You know, there are actually several roads to get up to the mesa. You can come in from the southern Colorado side, which was technically be north of the mesa, but it's the southern Colorado border. But we came in through the south of the mesa. We went up J2, and then there's a road just adjacent to J2 called 139, and there's a bridge. But again, you cannot go onto Jicarilla land and expect to just drive around. They will arrest you.
Who will arrest you?
The tribal law enforcement, the police officers.
Okay.
There, you're not allowed to just willy-nilly, you know, meander about on the... This is sovereign Indian land. You have to remember, it is a sovereign nation. They have their own set of rules, their own set of laws, and you must abide by them.
Well, what do you think? They just don't want trespassers, or what?
You know what? There are a lot of trespassers there because of the notoriety of the base. As a matter of fact, I know... another ufologist, a person who's essentially not necessarily a fan of mine, who snuck onto the reservation, and, you know, he admitted this to me, and I was not happy knowing this, you know, and I hope he doesn't do that again, because it's not to the advantage of the Jicarilla people, and it hurts the image of the Jicarilla nation, which is such a beautiful culture. They don't need people sneaking about. If you want to go to Dulce, ask for permission. Get the proper, you know, permission that is required. And we did. And we were given a 7-year veteran law enforcement officer and an 11-year, no, excuse me, a 13-year veteran law enforcement officer, two of them, who were going to serve as our guides. And we went with the one person who is now a professional hunting guide up there. And he works with a lot of famous people. I was shocked to learn that he had actually taken Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson up there hunting. It's just so gorgeous up there. So it doesn't surprise me that the people with the big bucks want to go to where all the the elk and the deer are. And anyhow, he took us up this road, and boy, I tell you, it was a treacherous road indeed. It was very treacherous. I mean, we were hugging cliffs, and we were driving on top of huge holes, and this guy had a wonderful 4x4 vehicle, and it took us about an hour and 40 minutes to get up to the plateau. And two things we spotted on the way up. One area that I call Shadow Ridge, which is just possible location for an entrance, and it really, really closely mirrors what the colonel said in the interview that I conducted with him. So I had a lot of interest in that area, and we did a lot of investigating, and we found some unnatural occurrences there. There was this wall of columnar basalt that had this massive pile of rubble on it. But we figured, okay, so there must be, you know, this natural collapse that occurred somewhere. But there wasn't one. There were normal striations in the columnar basalt that were consistent. And it, which tells us that this massive pile of rubble came from somewhere else. one of the people that we met with, who's now a chief of police in the a neighboring reservation, but who is Jicarilla himself, and I don't want to give his name out because Janet Taylor knows who I'm talking about, but this person doesn't want to be identified. Nobody wants to be identified. He claims that he has actually reported to Kirtland Air Force Base and the Jicarilla Police Departments during his 10 years of service as an officer that he saw holographic entrances, and he saw craft coming out of and going into these entrances. And, you know, this was, again, one of the new things that we discovered that was just lending more and more credibility to the information that we received from, that I received from the colonel. The other area
you mentioned the colonel twice here. Tell people, not everyone knows about Colonel X. Tell people a little bit. He was your major source for the Dulcie information originally on the original manuscript.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. So in 2010, January, I interviewed this colonel, and he is the basis for the book UFO Highway. All the information that I have from Dulcie comes from him. And so all of the facts, all of the data that I have come from the colonel, and that's who I'm trying to, that's the information that I'm trying to validate. That's why I went to Dulcie.
Yeah, I just got a Facebook message here, and a couple of them. One of them wants to know if we're going to take phone calls, and we will. We'll open up the phone lines a little later in the show. The other Facebook message was from someone who said, did you actually name the Colonel X, identify him? They thought you did sometime or another. I've never known that, but...
No, I never named him. I've never given his name.
No, I think that was misinformation. All I know about him is he was in academia and probably still is.
He still is. And he is a retired United States Air Force colonel. He was originally stationed in North Highlands. And then via Edwards Air Force Base, he somehow ended up in Dulcie because of this event that occurred in 79. I have never given out his name. I've never identified what university he worked at or works at. If somebody is out there saying that I have identified him, that's misleading. That's not true.
Well, I just got a question about it on Facebook, so.
No, it's okay. Yeah, no, I understand. There's a lot of people out there that think that I've identified him, but no. But I can tell you this. I finally learned the identities of the two individuals who admitted to being helicoptered in to the entrance of the facility on the southwest of the southwest of Mesa in 79. One was a New Mexico State police officer, and no, it was not Gabe Valdez, and the other was a Jicarilla high-ranking Jicarilla law enforcement officer. And I met with an individual who gave me both of their names. These two individuals spoke at length with this person that I told you about that I met with me and Janet Taylor.
Are they both deceased now?
Yeah, they are. Yes, they are.
Okay, go ahead, Ed. So tell me what you were told.
Well, one of them, their son is still around, and he's still there in Dulcie, the son of the officer. Norio knows this person very well. But again,
Norio Hayakawa, who's listening, by the way, and we got a note running. And you've worked very closely with Norio. Norio's had a Dulcie conference at one time. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, Norio's probably the foremost expert in the world on Dulcie. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts around it. Norio knows more about Dulcie. He knows more about all of the principles involved with the history and the mythology surrounding Dulcie. So he's somebody who I regularly attribute as my own, you know, resident expert. I often refer to Norio in these matters. But, yeah, so Norio knows the name of the son who's still around. The other person, I believe, is I'm pretty certain both people are now deceased. But, again, that information is not going to be released at this time. We just can't because it's just not disclosable at this point because there's a lot of classified information that could affect the lives of the people there on the Jicarilla Apache Reservation, and we don't want to hurt these people.
Okay, let's get back to the ambiance of your trip up there. Are those roads pretty rough to get up to?
They are extremely rough. As a matter of fact, several of the times when I was working with my camera and I actually let go of the handles inside of the truck, actually hit my head a couple of times on the inside of the truck. And Rick Prestel from Sacramento MUFON, who was manning the high-definition video camera himself, actually, you know, succumbed to a couple of head bumps when we hit some holes or, you know, we're going up a steep area. So, yeah, it's pretty treacherous up there. I don't recommend anyone try to drive up there. I stupidly thought I was going to be able to drive my car up there. They said, no, there's no way in hell you're going to be able to take your car up there. We're going to have to go in a 4x4 vehicle.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the video and pictures that you took while you were up there. That looks like even at the top of the mesa, it looks pretty rough.
It is extremely rough. I tell you what, it's pretty beautiful, though. Once you get to the plateau of the mesa, it's when you look towards Colorado and you look over the Jicarilla Nation, you know, southward, all over Dulce, any direction you look in, you're looking at beauty. It's immense beauty. It's gorgeous up there. So we found the 1996 crash site.
But before you go any further, tell me, what this 1996 crash site is. What happened?
In 1996, several families there in Dulce witnessed a 150-foot wide diameter copper-colored disc. It was glowing, and it was copper in color, smash into the top of the mesa. And a lot of them actually went up there immediately after the crash. And what happened is that as soon as they made it up there, helicopters were landing at the perimeter of the craft, where the crash site was, and they essentially said they cordoned off the area, they forced everyone back into town, and these black SUVs and these other, you know, military-type trucks reportedly came in and removed all of the evidence from the crash, all of the crash evidence. So,
do we know exactly what crashed?
No. Well, the people there that I interviewed said it was a massive disc, and it was copper. It was a copper-colored disc. That's all we have, and that it was essentially some.
It could be one of two things: either an experimental craft, a secret craft, or it could be extraterrestrial.
Exactly. You know, I did a map. I made a map of Dulce where I placed Dulce in the center, specifically the Archuleta Mesa. And I outlined all of the surrounding, you know, U.S. Naval Air Field installations, the Air Force bases, even a couple of Marine and Army installations that I found. And nothing comes closer than essentially, I think Kirtland, you know, is the closest. Kirtland Air Force Base comes to, I think it's between 200 and 350 miles to Dulce, but everything else is further away. But Dulce is smack dab in the middle of everything. And to me, I think what's happening in Dulce, now this is just my, this is my new opinion on what is happening there.
I can't wait to hear it. Go ahead and tell me.
Yeah, I think Dulce just happens to be, you know, smack dab in the middle of this highway that's consists of experimental craft from the military. Whether or not it's using alien technology, I don't know. But I think all experimental craft is coming out of like Los Alamos, Kirtland, all these places. It's just Dulce just happens to be right in the middle of it. So I think, you know, that's why this summer alone there have been multiple sightings of, again, this massive copper-colored disc, these nine silver discs flying in formation in broad daylight over Dulce Rock headed towards Farmington. There have just been a numerous amount of disc, you know, UFO sightings in Dulce this year alone. So, again, I think it lends credence to the fact that Dulce is just as highway for, you know, for experimental craft activity.
Do you still stand by your feelings about extraterrestrials being down there as well and 25,000 year history? Do you still stand by that?
Absolutely. I have every reason to believe.
So you think it's a combination, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but basically that you have the black operations you just alluded to, plus this other thing going on.
Well, get this. We made a startling connection in Dulce this year when we were there just a couple of weeks ago. We had a sketch from one of the presenters there, which was from Paul Benowitz. This is a sketch of an alien craft that Paul Benowitz saw. We interviewed a current chief of police of a neighboring area who did not want to be identified, but again, Janet Saylor was there, this person's family was there, Rick Prestel was there, I was there. He drew a sketch. This person has never seen the Paul Benowitz sketch in his life. He swore to us. I would say within a 95% likeness, the sketches were almost identical. And here's what's critical about this information. This is the person who says he saw craft coming in and out of holographic entrances of the Mesa, from the Mesa, one beneath the radio tower and one in the southwest portion, which was the main area, where the 1979, incident occurred and where the two gentlemen were helicoptered in from law enforcement agencies. What was critical is that the craft sketches looked nearly identical. This person and another officer reported this incident to the Jicarilla Police Department and to Kirtland Air Force Base on what they saw. They saw a craft, a silver-colored craft. It's not a disc. It's more like a teardrop shape. And inside of the front area of the craft was a cockpit. Inside, it was illuminated with a fluorescent color, like a purplish, lavenderish color. And there was a creature inside of it, a being. And it was what he described as a gray. Now, you've got to remember, this is a person who is a Jicarilla. And they have beliefs that, that essentially tie into these mythologies. So to him, seeing something like this was not, the craft is what was startling to him. The actual being, the creature, was not what startled him. But because you have to understand that in that area, from the Jicarilla Apache Nation all the way over to Taos Pueblo, they have a history of seeing things in the wilderness, in the sky, underground,